So in the previous hymn we sang about it, and now we've just heard in the gospel reading the story of breakfast on the beach. And we enter further into the Easter season and the work of Easter, working out what it means to have resurrection set loose in the world, in the church, and also in our lives. Last week, Linda and I were talking about Easter, and we thought that after Easter Day, everything had felt flat or even empty. And when really looking into Easter, Easter itself is actually empty. Now let me explain. After the graphic realities of Holy Week, where we had broken bread, we had feet washed, there were thorns pressed into Jesus' scalp, we had crosses raised, and then we had a body laid in a new grave. Easter, by contrast, is about an absence, because the body is no longer in the tomb, and we're left to work out what that actually means. Today's story makes it clear that one of the functions of resurrection, life is resurrection, of relationship and deep forgiveness. In the reading, Peter announces he's going fishing, and several of the disciples decide to go along with him. And in previous chapters in the gospel, we've heard how Peter has denied Jesus and how he fled from the scene of the crucifixion. And although Peter loves Jesus without reservation, his fear has led him to distance himself from Jesus. And we're left to imagine his disappointment with himself and his guilt and his shame. It now seems that Peter has returned to what he knows best. Amid all the confusion and the grief of the aftermath of the crucifixion, he feels most like himself aboard a fishing boat, handling the heavy nets throughout a cold night. His efforts, however, are fruitless after a night of fishing, and the group has caught exactly nothing. So on top of his grief and his sense of having failed Jesus, he's now confronted with failing at something he has done for all of his life. However, as the dawn breaks, the disciples see a man on the shore, and they see the smoke from a small fire. The stranger calls out to them and suggests something very odd. "Cast your nets on the other side of the boat," he shouts across the water. Now, I don't know about you, but if I have been working for a day and I'm really tired and I'm really fed up and I haven't had any joy out of what I've been doing, I'm actually not sure that I would have done what Peter and the disciples had done. But saying that, I'm not Peter or one of those disciples. And as we hear, surprisingly, the disciples actually comply. And the next thing they know is that their net is full to bursting with fish. And suddenly Peter realizes that he has seen something like this before on a hillside with thousands of people. He watched Jesus break bread and fish until they were all fed. He remembers a wedding in Cana when water was turned into wine of the highest quality. So the beloved disciples shout, "It is the Lord!" And Peter clambers towards the shore with his heart bursting with excitement. In fact, it really is Jesus, and he invites them to come and have breakfast with him, as though it was just a normal morning after a night of fishing. The disciples looks of amazement across at each other, across at the fire and the wonder of, really, is this real? The story, I think, gives a very good bookend to the Last Supper. This first breakfast changes the trajectory for the disciples from grief and confusion to purpose and mission. everything Jesus said to the disciples before his crucifixion, and in John's Gospel there is a lot that has been said, it's now coming to bear on the disciples and their purpose. But first, Jesus has some very specific business to do with Peter. And I think it's worth saying that Peter, in so many gospel stories, is a stand-in for us. His enthusiasm, his awkwardness, his lack of understanding, and also his enormous love for Jesus are just quite similar to our own. So when the gospel story focuses on Peter, I think it's good to say that we are also part of that story. Before his arrest and crucifixion, Jesus told Peter that he would deny him three times. And sadly, as we know, his prediction comes true. Peter is accosted repeatedly by the bystanders as he waits outside while Jesus is being interviewed. And each time he denies knowing Jesus. He's also absent from the crucifixion. He's among his disciples who meet behind locked doors out of fear. Now Jesus speaks to him directly. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Jesus asks him three times. And three times Peter affirms his love for Jesus. And each time Jesus says, then feed my sheep. Peter is given the opportunity to undo his denial of Jesus with three affirmations of love. Jesus tells him what to do with that love. Feed the flock. And though the word forgiveness never appears in the story, it is nevertheless a critical theme. Peter, the impetuous, big-mouthed disciple, gave in to fear and failed to acknowledge Jesus. He also failed to stick around to the bitter end. However, now Peter is given the opportunity to face the risen Lord and begin again. And this story offers some of the deepest implications of resurrection for us. We are forgiven. We are invited to start over. We are completely loved. And we have got a job to do. And as I said before, this isn't only Peter's story. It's our story too. So when fear holds us back, love calls us forward. When we feel trapped by the things have always been, Jesus invites us to cast our nets on the other side of the boat, or in other words, to change our perspective. And so what does this mean for you? Are you held back from the abundant life Jesus promises by guilt, shame, or fear? If you understood yourself to be completely forgiven, completely loved and completely free, how would that change the choices you make about your life, about your work, your money, your relationships? The light of resurrection shining into us invites us to look clearly at how we have made choices out of fear rather than love, and to now move away from the fear that has bound us. The implications of this story also resonate in our church life. Are we making choices on mission based on fear and failure? Or our guilt for past failures? Are we pointed forward with the light of the resurrection at our backs? Because we are completely loved, completely forgiven, and completely free, we are called not only to proclaim God's love known to us in Jesus, but also act on it. And that means setting aside fear and the way fear binds us into small lives, and embracing love as the basis of every action we take. God's love, set loose in the world in the resurrection, needs our hands and feet and hearts to make it concrete in our place in time. Like Peter, we're invited to change our perspective and cast our nets where the love of God is available for us, and there is plenty for everyone. Jesus invites us to come and have breakfast. So in the morning light of resurrection, there is no room for guilt and fear, for we are forgiven, loved and free, and we also have some sheep to feed. Amen.